kind of late already. We should start. Okay, everybody, we're good to go? Are we good to go?
Yes, we are. You're alive.
So today we are going to try to crack open one of the greatest mysteries. One of the greatest mysteries in the Torah. His business, did Jacob die? Did he die? You're like, what do you mean? Of course he dies. Not so simple. So, we are going to begin in Parshas Vayechi. The Parsha opens with Yaakov Avinu calling his son Yosef. And the reason that he calls his son Yosef is because he wants to make funeral preparations. He wants to make sure that his body gets transported to the Holy Land so that he can be buried in Ma'arat HaMachpelah. And he also wants to confer a special gift upon Yosef's progeny. Two of Yosef's children will be elevated to the status of tribes, of Shvatim. And then after that takes place, all of Yaakov's children are gathered together, and Yaakov blesses all of his children. All of this takes place, incidentally, in one day. And in the same day, Yaakov passes on. And that's what we're going to take a look at now. In the last verse, before we read about the passing of Yaakov, is found in chapter 49 of the book of Genesis. After the Torah gives us a roundup in verse 28 and tells us these are the tribes of Israel, all 12 of them. They were all blessed. Ish asher ki berchosei berachosam. They all got the blessing they needed. Verse 29. This is where we begin our analysis, where Yaakov Avinu goes back to his original concern and he gives them instructions and he says, I'm going to die now. Make sure you bury me in Ma'arat HaMachpelah. And we have three verses in a row where Yaakov emphasizes the details of his burial place. Verse 33. Vayichal Yaakov letzavot et banav. Yaakov has now concluded giving instructions to his children. Yesof Raglov, he gathered his feet, El Hamita to the bed, Vayigva, he expired, Vayosef Alama, who was gathered onto his nation. So we're going to begin our class by looking at the very beginning of this pasuk, where it says that after Yaakov gave all his instructions and all his blessings, he gave instructions again. It says, he finally, Vayichal Yaakov Letzavot, he gave the final instructions to his children. So the Medrash asks the question, which instructions? I mean, he took care of everything. He planned out the whole funeral. Which instructions? What was the last instructions that he gave? So the Medrash says, Matzivam, litoines mitasei, how they should carry his coffin. Three on the east side, three on the west side, three on the north side, and three on the south side. And he said, al yitoin mitasei echad mibnei bneichem, I don't want any of your children's children, any of my grandchildren, to carry my coffin, Shehem Ibnes Knan, because they come from the daughters of Knan. In other words, the Shvatim married. Obviously, these women had to be converted, but it wasn't directly from the family of Avram anymore. And he says, that's it, only my children. Nobody else carries my coffin. Netanchum Yashan, it speaks about this in a little bit of a different way. He says this is the way they are going to camp, the Jewish people will camp in the future. And Yaakov at the time, just before he's leaving the earth, he blesses his children, and then he gives them last instructions. And he tells them, Kishet titlu oti, when you carry me, do it beyira v'chavod titlu oti. You do it with a sense of awe and a sense of honor and reverence. V'layiga adam acha b'mitasi, let nobody else touch my coffin. L'yechad min ha-mitzriyim, none of the Egyptians. V'layechad b'mnechem, none of your children. So this is the last instructions he gives. And the Torah tells us, after all that Yaakov has talked about in Parshas Vayechi, Vayechal Yaakov letzavot, now he concludes, now he gives the final instructions. So this is a very telling verse. It's a very telling verse. Why is it so telling? Because it says to us that Yaakov was busy giving instructions, meaning he was basically in control until the very last moment of his terrestrial lifetime. That is an anomaly. And you may ask me why. What's so strange? What's so unusual about that? Well, here our sages make a lot of hay about this. Let me share with you the comment of, for example, the Rambam's son. He says that Yaakov's final instructions indicate that everything took place on this one day. Where Yosef arrived with his children, Yaakov sat up. And when he sat up, he literally sat. And Rambam's son describes Yosef, Yaakov Avinu's feet dangling off his bed. And he says he had a lot of strength. Because as he was sitting on his bed, he gathered his grandchildren, Ephraim and Manasseh. And then Yosef had to take the children out of his father's embrace, out of his father's lap. And he had to try to arrange them, as he did, for the blessing. And Yaakov remained seated the whole time. This is not a frail Yaakov speaking from his deathbed. This is a Yaakov in charge, Yaakov in command. He's sitting up on his bed. He's in full control. Rabbeinu Menachem, who wrote the Medr Seichel Tov, says, "Umau atzavo." What was the last thing he said? What does the Torah emphasize here again? Lishmar darkei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He said, make sure you keep your Yiddishkeit. Make sure you watch the ways of God. And here's where it starts to get very interesting. So from the fact that Yaakov Avinu had this strength, and from the fact that he was able still to give instructions until the very last minute, from this we can see that with regard to Yaakov Avinu, a certain verse in the Torah was never fulfilled. Which verse is this? There's a verse that says, Ein shiltein b'yoyim ha-mavas, that on the day of passing, then nobody's in control anymore. You're not in control at the end. However, from the very fact that we can see that he was sitting on his bed and he had strength, from this we can see, says the Orach Chaim, that with regard to Yaakov, there was no such thing as Ein Shilton, that he had no control. He did have control until the last minute. Rashbam says that he had Lahagid. All of this verse teaches us, Koach Eskato Shel Yaakov, that he had strength, shenosna kodesh baruch hu b'koach, that he had strength, ad eight gviya, until the time of actual passing, he had full strength. In other words, his strength did not ebb away from him. And here the Ohr HaChaim says, how is this possible? How is it possible? Because we know that at the time of passing, a person becomes weaker and weaker, until such time as they fade out. And here, Yaakov doesn't fade out. Yaakov is in full control. So the Ohr HaChaim says, I will tell you what's going on here. The fact that Yaakov Avinu was in full control until he lifted his feet off at the moment when he has to, so to speak, go, curls up, as Rashi says, or lifts his feet and lays down in bed at the last moment, this is only because Yaakov Avinu lo met. It's only because he never died. Because if he had died, then the last moments couldn't have happened. These are not the last moments of a dying man. These are the last moments of a person who's in full control until the last second. And that's how the Ohr HaChaim understands this. Now, with regard to this business of Yaakov lo meis, and there's a reason I'm giving you this background. The pasuk, the actual verse in the Torah that speaks about Yaakov's passing, it says, Vayigva, that he passes, Vayyosef alamov, and he gathers onto his people. So all the words we need are here. he gathers onto his people, he expires, everything's here, it's all there. There's one little word that's missing over here. You know which word is missing? Death. The word died never shows up. It shows up with Sarah Imenu, it shows up with Avram Avinu, it shows up with Yitzchak Avinu, it shows up with Rachel Imenu. By every one of them, we use the terminology of Vayigva, but we also use the terminology of Vayamat or Vatamat. Every single time it says death. The only time in the Torah the word death doesn't appear is when it describes the passing of Yaakov. There is no passing that the Torah gives so much attention to, perhaps with the exception of Moshe Rabbeinu. An entire parsha that's devoted only to the postmortem of Yaakov Avinu's, the pre-mortem, before Yaakov Avinu, very little postmortem. Almost all of it is before Yaakov passes, and then we get a postmortem. And the actual verse, this whole parsha revolves around one event. The event is Yaakov's death. That's the event. But besides the fact that the parsha is called Vayechi, which means life, the event that the entire parsha revolves around, the one word that the whole parsha should be spinning around, is missing. It's not there. It just says he was in full control, and then he gathered his feet very neatly, Vayigva, Vayosef Alamav, doesn't die, doesn't say anything about death. So Rashi says, Umisa loinemru vay. It doesn't say the word death. And so Rashi says, V'amru Rabbi Seinu, our rabbis taught, and here Rashi sends us off to a Gemara in Masechet Tanit, which I'll soon share the details with you. He says, if we see from here that the Yaakov lo mit, that Yaakov did not die. Because if he would die, we'd have to say that he died. But it doesn't say he died. And because it doesn't say he died, Yaakov didn't die. And as the Aruch Chaim explained, this kind of helps us understand everything that happens prior. It's not just because the word Vayamat is missing. This explains to us why there wasn't a process of death, which a process of death is when the neshama and body, they separate. And you're not in control till the last second. But Yaakov's in full control until he says, okay, I'm done now. And he's sitting on the bed. He's telling everybody exactly what they should do. And then he simply lays down and that's it. Lights out. But 1 second, it's not really lights out because he never died. So obviously this does not make any sense to us. It's a whole parsha about Yaakov's funeral, about Yaakov's burial. He told me Yaakov didn't die. But where did he go? What happened to him? It doesn't, something here does not make any sense whatsoever. So we're going to spend the lion's share of today's class trying to understand what this might mean. But let me first begin with the Gemara in Masechet Tanit. The Gemara there says, it's Masechet Tanit, page 5, side 2, Hey Amid Beis. The Gemara says like this. This is what Rabbi Yochanan said. Yaakov Avinu lo mit. Yaakov never died. Okay, he never died. So the Gemara says, that's interesting. Omar Leh, they said to Rabbi Yochanan, tell me. V'chi b'chdi sefadu svadainya v'chontu chanataya v'kavru kibaraya. He never died, eh? Okay, so tell me, all the embalming, which we're going to talk about later on in today's class, and all the preparation that they did for Yaakov's burial, and then the actual burial, that was like a joke? What they did it on a live person? If he was alive, why were they burying him? It's a fair question to ask. Rashi says, V'chi bechinam? Was it done for no reason? Did they have eulogies and mourning for a person who was alive? So Rabbi Yechanan responds and he says, Amar Lehi said to them, Mikra ani deirish. I am expounding the verses. There is a verse, and the verse says, Va'ata, and now. It's a verse, the pasuk is in the prophecies of Jeremiah, of Yirmiyahu, in the 30th chapter, in the 10th verse. And it says, Al tira avdi Yaakov, do not fear my servant Jacob. Ne'um Hashem, it says I God. Va'al techas Yisrael, do not be frightened Israel. Ki hinene mishiacha me'rochek, I will come from afar to save you. Ve'zaracha, and your progeny, me'eretz shivyom, from the land of their captivity. So Makish hu Lazaro. We have a juxtaposition between Jacob and Jacob's progeny. And therefore, we must come to the conclusion that Mazaro b'chayim, that if his children are alive, because they need to be saved, you don't need to be saved when you're in the other world. But here they're in a land of captivity. They need to be saved. So if his children need to be saved, and he needs to be saved, then he can't be in Gan Eden if they're getting saved in the physical world. So the fact that the Torah juxtaposes, that the prophet, the Navi, when he foretells the future, juxtaposes Yaakov being saved, along with the people of Israel being saved, this necessarily informs us that if his children are alive, he has to be alive. Now Rashi says the most unbelievable thing here. He says, Mikra ani derish, I expound a verse, and this business of them embalming him, Sivurim Chayusha Meis. Rashi says they thought he died. He didn't die. They thought he died. Because they thought he died, they embalmed his body. But really, he didn't die. That's what Rashi says. And Rashi says, Ma Zarei B'chayim Kishu Mekabetz Es Yisrael Me'eretz Shivyom, when God will gather the Jewish people from the land of their captivity. Hachayim Hu Mekabetz. You gather from captivity those who are living physically. Shehein b'shvi, they are in captives. Hamesim eni b'shvi. You can't be a captive when you're dead. You're free when you're dead. So the fact that it says that you have to redeem from captivity, God says Yaakov and his progeny, afu b'chayim. Sheyivienu b'goyla, that he must have come into galut with us. And God is now going to kedei ligulas bon of leinov, so that Hashem will redeem his children before his very eyes, like it says with regard to Egypt, Vayar Yisrael, Israel saw. Vidarshinan, we learn who saw, who's Israel. Israel, here's not the nation. Israel's the person, Yisrael Saba, the grandfather Israel. And Rashi says again, Udechan tucharataya, and the fact that they embalmed him, Nidma lehem shemes, they thought he was dead. Aval chay haya, but he was alive.
Was he sleeping?
Did you ever try to embalm a sleeping person?
I mean, how could that be?
We have a problem here.
Yeah.
This seriously does not make sense to us. Right? This sounds off the walls. What does this mean? And remember, Rashi is not giving us midrashic interpretation. Rashi is giving us the straightforward meaning. When he speaks about the pasuk, he says, Mita, the word death is missing. He says he didn't die. He says, go look in the Gemara. And Rashi in the Gemara says, Sivurim ayu shamesu. They thought he died, but he didn't die. What does this mean? Now, there are those who maintain that all of this has to be understood in an allegorical context. So, for example, we have the Maharsha, who says, Lo meit benefesh. He didn't die from a soul perspective, but beguf hayamet, bodily, in a bodily sense, he did die. Well, that doesn't really help us. It doesn't really help us for two reasons. Number one, Rashi says they thought he died, but he didn't die. So what does it mean, they thought he died, but he didn't die? They thought he died spiritually, but he like, they're only dealing with their physical reality. It's very hard for me to see how he could square the Marsha's words at Rashi. And the other problem, of course, is everybody lives on in spirit. Every Jew lives on in spirit. What, did Avraham Avinu not live on in spirit? Did Yitzchak not live in spirit? Did Sarah not live? Did Rivka not live? Only Yaakov gets to live on in spirit. What does that mean? So the Marsha says, well, he lived even more than Avraham and Yitzchak. Why did he live even more than Avraham and Yitzchak? Because Avraham and Yitzchak left behind progeny who they did not have any nachas from. One left behind the Yishmael and the children of Keturah, and one left behind an Esau, and because they left behind these less than good people, so therefore it couldn't say that their spirits lived on. Okay, so it's all like an allegory. The Tzreir Hamor says that it says that Avram and Yitzchak died because of the progeny, but not because they really died. They also didn't really die. But the Torah uses the word death. So he's saying the word death applies by Avraham and Yitzchak because of the progeny left behind. But death doesn't apply to Yaakov. It's missing from the Torah. The word death is missing. And that's alluding to the fact that his children were wicked. On a straightforward read, it doesn't flow. And the most important part is that according to a number of the Rishonim and the Medrash that I quoted, the last moments of Yaakov's life were not the last moments before death. Because the Pasuk says, before death, there's no control. Incidentally, even with regard to Moshe Rabbeinu, there was changes on the last day of his life. and the certain things called the trumpets, which have to be squirreled away. And it says, Ein shilton b'yom ha-malas. Moshe Rabbeinu already had to confer agency onto Yahushua, and Moshe Rabbeinu was no longer in control. So there's nobody ever in history that remains in control until the last nanosecond other than Jacob. Nobody in history. The only one. And the Gemara says, okay, remain control. We're talking about Yaakov being alive, not Yaakov's children. Yaakov being in control. So sure, there is a way to understand Yaakov's eternal life as he lives through his children, Mazaro b'chaim, Mafu b'chaim, but that's not what the straightforward read of the Talmud says. It's not how Rashi explains it. He says, Mazaro b'chaim, Mafu b'chaim means they're in captivity, they're going to be released. Dead people don't come out of captivity. Live people are taken out of captivity. Yaakov will be taken out of captivity as well. They're in galut, he's in galut. They will go out of galut, he will go out of galut. That doesn't seem to sound allegorical. So, you know, like Abarbanel comes along and he says, there's no nation of Abraham. There's no nation called Abraham. There's no nation called Isaac. But there's a nation called Israel. There's the house of Jacob. And he says, that's the meaning of Yaakov lives on. The nation lives on. Okay, this is all beautiful poetic explanations. On a homiletical level, it's effective. But if we have a straightforward read of the Gemara, the way Rashi explains it to us, it really doesn't help us. And it certainly doesn't work in Pshuto Shel Mikra, where we come along and say, ah, you know why it is that in Pshuto Shel Mikra, in the literal interpretation of the actual Pasuk, it says, Mita is missing, to give you some kind of allegorical concept that Yaakov's spirit lives on. It's not what Rashi says. And there has to be another way to explain this business. So, to help you understand this, I'm going to introduce you now to the words of Nachmanides, the Ramban. And I will share with you some of the explanations which are provided with regard to Ramban. And then, we're going to take a look at the words of Rabbeinu Bechaya. So Ramban says like this. He notes the fact that death is not mentioned. He quotes Rashi saying, the teacher, the rabbis taught that Yaakov never died. And he says, how would our rabbis explain the fact that Yaakov says only four verses earlier, Hinei anochi holech lamut, Hinei anochi meit, I'm going, not four verses, pardon me. This is before he begins all the blessings. Before all the blessings to his sons, when he speaks to Yosef at the very end of blessing Yosef's children, he says to Yosef, chapter 48, verse 21, so on the same day, as Rabbi Avraham ben Arambam says, and Radak says the same thing also, incidentally, that was on the same day. Vayomer Yisrael Yosef, hinei anochi meit, I'm going to die. You're telling me he didn't die? Yaakov himself said, I'm going to die. So how could we say he didn't die? So Ramban says, despite the fact that he mentioned that he was going to die, maybe he didn't even know himself what's going to happen. He didn't appreciate and understand that he wasn't going to die. He only found this out later. Or maybe he didn't want to be prideful, speak about himself in a way which maybe shatters the glass ceiling of the generations before. He didn't want to look different. So I'm going to die. Because on some level he's dying. He's got to get buried. We still haven't worked that out, how they buried a live man. Or how they embalmed a live person. So he said, I'm going to die. But that is not a contradiction. He says, what is a bigger challenge is the fact that the brothers of Yosef, they said Yaakov died. They saw him die. It says, Vayiru Ache Yosef, they saw Kimet Aviem, that the father died. And you're telling me he didn't die. But for Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, he did die. They saw he died. Ramban says, you know what? Lahem meitu. For them he was dead. And not for Yosef. They didn't even know what was going on. Sivurim hayushemes, Rashi says, everybody else thought he died. Yaakov's children also thought he died. But he really didn't die. They thought he died. It falls into the same common approach as everything that was done. The preparations, the mourning, the grieving, the funeral. They thought he died. But he didn't really die. Okay, so what does that mean? So, what does it mean, didn't die? What happened over here? So before we go on to the words of the Ramban, I want to share with you a little bit of Kabbalistic description about the neshama and about the way the neshama functions. So as a rule, you have to understand that the neshama is, it's like the metaphor I'll use is raw energy. But raw energy has to have like a wick. It has to have a container. It's got to have something that can hold it, something that enables it to resonate or to illuminate in this world. We use the terminology of levush. Levush means a garment, but perhaps for our purposes, you would say an envelope, a convention. There has to be some kind of convention through which the neshama is able to express itself. Otherwise, the neshama remains on an ethereal or spiritual reality, but doesn't express itself in what we call the real world. So there's this concept of the neshama. And the neshama has three phases of existence. There's the neshama of a tzaddik, let's say, the way it exists during the tzaddik's terrestrial lifetime, where the tzaddik always remains connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like, for example, like the Kuzari calls it, or the Rabbi Nissen, the Ran calls it. He says that a tzaddik during his lifetime is a ma'in, a dwelling, an abode for the Shekhinah, that God resides in the person of a tzaddik. And the person of a tzaddik is like a mini Beis HaMikdash. That's what Rabbeinu Nissen says. That's what the Ran says in his drashas. He speaks about the Beis HaMikdash. And he speaks about the Beis HaMikdash being a place where there's a very high acuity for spiritual reception. And he says that great prophets would get their prophecy in the Beis HaMikdash. For example, it says that Jonah received his prophecy in the Beis HaMikdash during the days of Simchat Beit HaShoeva, in the Beis HaMikdash. And he says, just like the Beis HaMikdash was a place of high receptivity for those who would be on a very lofty level to begin with. So you and I show up in the Beis HaMikdash, we're not having prophecy. Yonah shows up in the Beis HaMikdash, he gets prophecy. And that would happen because it's a, so to speak, powerful reception here. So he says, in when there's no Beis HaMikdash, the same thing is true of tzaddik. And he says, if you think that's only during tzaddikim's lifetime, you make a big mistake. He says, and after their passing, it's even more so, in proximity to their remains, to ever the tzaddik's body remains. That becomes a moyen for the Shekhinah. So we have this idea of the tzaddik being an abode for the Shekhinah during his or her terrestrial lifetime. Then we have the neshama, the way it's divested of a body, the way it would live, I guess you would call it in Gan Eden. And then we have the neshama, the way it's going to return to this world, and what's called the resurrection, Olam HaTchiyah. These are the three phases of the neshama. Three phases of the neshama's life. The neshama is released from the repository of souls. It's attached to a body. It passes from the body. It goes to the proverbial heaven or Garden of Eden. And then it lives once again within a bodily reality. Okay. So these three phases, the Ramban is now going to say that the Inyan HaMedrash goes like this, he says. Ki nafsheis ha-tzadikim, the souls of tzadikim, tzururois betzroir ha-chayim. They are bound onto the bond of life. They are directly linked to the source of all life, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the tzaddik, who's a resting place, a receptacle, a convention for the presence of Hashem. But then usually, the body and soul separate. Ramban says, v'zo, this one, meaning Yaakov, techofef alav kol hayom. His soul continued to remain fully attached to the body, hovering above the body continuously. And then he says, in addition to the notion of it hovering above the body and never really leaving the area of the body, it also is loveshet levushat hashoni. I'm going to use that terminology now, even though Rabbeinu Bechaya will have a different terminology. Levush hashoni is what's taken from Eshet Chayil, from the end of the book of Proverbs, where it speaks over there about the glorious raiments or beautiful clothes of the Eshet Chayil. And it says she has these clothes of shoni, which are like a fine red wool, or a beautiful scarlet wool. So the idea of it's not about the color, it's very, very beautiful garments, very, very precious garments. So the soul for Yaakov Avinu is techofef alav kol hayom. It remains tethered to the body. It hovers above the body. But the neshama wears a new special garment. So usually, up until this point, the neshama's garment was the body. Now the neshama is no longer living within the body, meaning the body is no longer animated, but the neshama remains connected to the body, and the levush, the garment that it wears, is a precious garment. This soul is not stripped naked of its body or of its levush. This soul has a continued garment. It's a euphemism. Nudity is not a concept for souls, obviously. But it means that usually a soul is stripped of its levush, of its garment. And so the soul is no longer able to function in this world because it's stripped of its garment, its ability, the convention, the envelope through which it operates. But here, the neshama like almost incubates within this different kind of levush, a different kind of convention. And it's never stripped of its special garment. And this is Kiyakov. This is Kiyakov. And the Ramban says, O titlabesh le'itim mizumonot, or it could not only be that it's not stripped entirely of a garment, that it has some kind of terrestrial garment, but that it's able to actually become embodied in this in a literal way, from time to time. That's what Ramban says. So, if we take Ramban now at face value, when it says Yaakov lo mate, Yaakov didn't die, and Rashi tells us they thought he died, but really he didn't die, death would mean that the neshama lived in this world, and now the neshama has left this world. But Yaakov's neshama didn't leave this world. Yaakov's neshama remained connected to his earthly body, to chofef alav, it remained hovering above. And not only it remains hovering above the body, but it also has an actual garment, a secondary body, if you will, another kind of body, a precious kind of body, a precious garment, which it's able to actually use at certain times. And this, he says, is what's talked about in Masechet Shabbat. This is talked about in the tractate that he's referring to, the page 152, side B. And this is what's talked about in Masechet Ketubot, speaking about page 103. What are the stories of these two Gemaras? Let me introduce you to these Gemaras. And then afterwards, we're going to take a look in Rabbeinu Bechaya and try to understand this Ramban a little bit better. So I'm going to first share with you the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, because that's the first one the Ramban references. And the Gemara says like this. It's Daf Kuf Nun Beis Amud Beis. Near the bottom, the Gemara says that Rav Mori taught Atidim Tzadikim Dehavi Afra. In the future, all of the righteous will return to dust. And how do we know this? Because in the book of Kohelet, in the book of Ecclesiastics, it says, V'yashov ha'afar al ha'aretz kishahaya, that the person is buried essentially in the ground, and then he is returned to earth like he was before he was created, and that's the way of people. All people go in the ground, are returned to earth, and from there, there can be a tchiyah, there can be eventually a resurrection. So the Gemara says, so let me tell you the story, says the Gemara. Hanu kapoloi dahave kofli ba'ara. There was this work detail, a group of diggers. And these people were digging in the ground that belonged to Rav Nachman. What happened is that suddenly, nachar bahu Rav Achai bar Yashia. Rav Achai bar Yashia, who unbeknownst to them was buried in this tract of land, he kind of attacked them. He said, what are you doing over here? And these guys got really freaked out, obviously. Also, so the workers came, va'amru leila Rav Nachman, they said to Rav Nachman, nochar bon gavra, there's some guy who we disturbed. He's really unhappy with us. Nachman says, some guy who's living in my field. Also, Rav Nachman comes, va'amru leila, and he says to this person, man nihu, who are you? Man nihu mar. Amru leila says, who am I? Ano Achai Bar Yashia. Gives him a name. Now, Achai Bar Yashia had been a person who lived in the previous generation. He was a great teacher of Torah. Rav Nachman knew his name. He had heard of him. He didn't recognize him because there were no pictures. This is a century before. But he knew the name. So Rav Nachman says, what? V'lav Omer Rav Mori, did Rav Mori not teach Asidi Tzadiki to have Afra, that in the future of a tzaddik, all tzaddikim turn into dust? How could you not be dust? It was a body there. He's talking to a person who was buried 100 years earlier. So, this Rav Yashia, Rav Achoy Bar Yashia, responds to him, Amar Lei, Mane Mori, who is Mori? Who's Mari? Mari said, I don't know who Mari is. Now the Ben Yoyada explains, he wasn't saying this in an arrogant way. I don't recognize Mari. I don't know who he is. He lived in a previous generation. You're telling me about some Torah teaching that somebody said now? I never heard that. And then he says, I don't know who this Mari is, the Loyadina Lei. Omar Lei Vakra, but it's a pasuk. What do you know? You don't have to know Mari, but the pasuk says, V'yashuv Afer Aladis Kishahaya. He quotes the verse that Rav Mari quoted. So he says, Omar Lei, the Akrayach Kayeles, Loyakrayach Mishle. You seem very good at quoting Ecclesiastics. Maybe you should go back to learning Proverbs. It says otherwise in Mishle. What does it say in Mishle? And here he quotes a verse from Mishle, chapter 14, verse 30, where it says, Urekav Atzomeis Kina. That the rotting of bones comes from jealousy. And he says, Kol mi sheyesh lekina, anybody who has jealousy, believe in his heart, atzmais of markivin. So his bones will rot. However, kol elu she'ein kina belibay, ein atzmais of markivin. No jealousy in the heart, no rotting of bones. So he says, I don't understand what your problem is. You want to know why I didn't rot? I thought why I didn't rot. It says clearly. Maharal of Prague explains that jealousy comes because you feel what you're missing all the time. That's why people are jealous. I'm jealous of what somebody else has. I notice my own lack. He says anybody who obsesses over what they don't have, so then these abscesses, all these things that they're missing, cause a collapse of the of physical reality. But a person who didn't notice was never missing anything, had everything, was fully content, so that person doesn't have any abscesses. He doesn't have any, there's nothing missing. And in that sense, there's no room for the body to, so to speak, collapse. So the Gemara says, at this point, Rav Nachman must be really freaked out. So it says, Geshoshe, he touched him. He wanted to see, is this guy for real? Like, am I dreaming? He touched him. And Chazia de Izbe Mav Shosha. He said, wow. He touched him, he says, there's something here. This is not an imagination. This is not virtual reality. Now, it doesn't say he saw there was a body, but there was he touched something. There was something real here. This is not what we call a virtual reality. There was a dense, literal reality. Omalei says to him, look, I mean, Leiko Mar Legavi de Vesu, maybe we should come into the house? Now, the Mefarshim says, Ben Yehuda says, what do you mean? He can't invite him to leave the earth. He's now doing Tchias HaMesim. He was buried. He has to remain there. He's inviting him. Okay, why don't you just rejoin the living? This is a person who lived 100 years ago. So he says he didn't mean to invite him to the house for coffee. He said, I'd like to move you to a more honorable spot. You seem to be here in the middle of a field. Nobody even knew you buried here. Let me move you to like a nicer place. Let me inter you in a more respectable fashion. Amalei, so he said back to him, this is the dead person. He says, Galas adaitech ta'afilu nevi'e le'koris. Now it seems that you don't even know the prophets. Forget the writings. You don't even know the prophets, he says. Because there's a pasuk in Yecheskel in the 37th chapter that says, V'yadaitim ki ani Hashem b'fischi es kivriseichem. You'll know that it's I, God, who opens your graves, and it's I, God, who takes you out of the grave. And therefore, it seems that you don't have permission to leave your grave by yourself. God takes you out of your grave. He says, God, I don't know, like, I don't know what kind of rabbi you are. Like, you seem to be missing all the basics, and I can't leave here. So Reb Nachman platzes and he says, it says, you are dust and you return to dust, and this is the curse that God gives to Adam and Rishon, and it's effective for every single human being, and that the Torah says it has to be like that. How could you still be like this? So he says, what's the problem? Right before the resurrection, I turned to dust and a brand new body is created. But up until then, this is the body. That's the body. How does the body not decompose? So Rav Acha Bar Yasha's body clearly did not decompose. So actually, this is not a problem. It makes perfect sense. Let me read to you something that the Rebbe Rashab wrote in the Maimer, which will help you understand when you put the words of Ramban, of Techeifefel of Kalayim, and you read the words of this Maimri, the Rebbe Shab says like this. He says, when the body and soul separate, eventually the body rots. The body decomposes. And he says that's because the existence of a bodily reality requires a soul to keep it going. And if the soul is no longer there, then the soul cannot continue to exist. the body can't continue to exist. And he says that the soul is very much invested in the body. It's melubash. It's invested. And because it's invested in the body, so that's why a body is able to function well. But when the soul leaves the body, there's no life left in it. No life left in it. You know, tables don't decompose overnight. The wood has been dead for a long time. Furniture could last centuries before everything will rot, eventually decompose. But the only thing we see that really decomposes in that fashion is the human beings, really all mammals. Soul leaves, the body decomposes. So he says this is because they're very much connected to the bodies, to the souls. And when the soul is not there, so that's why the body will necessarily decompose and go back to earth, become a minimal reality. So the Rebbe Rashab himself asks, if so, then why doesn't the body decompose instantaneously? Soul leaves, body decomposes. And he says, I'm going to tell you something. The truth is that when the body and soul separate, it's a process. It's a process. The soul remains tethered to the body in the beginning. And he says there's 3 days, there's 7 days, there's shloshim, there's a process through which the neshama takes leave of the body. And that's the natural process of decomposition. And the further the soul gets, the quicker the body decomposes. Which incidentally helps us understand the meaning of kever yisrael, the meaning of being buried in a manner that allows for decomposition. Because when people bury Rachmana Litzlan in like a metal coffin, or they do not allow the body to decompose, they actually do not allow the neshama to go on to its eternal rest. Because the neshama needs to be set free of the body. And the only way the neshama can be set free of the body is if the body is allowed to be restored to its natural elements. But if that process is impeded, we cause tremendous pain for the neshama. And the neshama cannot find itself. It cannot find its peace. And it's a million times worse, Rachmana Litzlan, when there's a cremation. Because cremation is an unnatural decomposition of the body. And when that happens, it causes the neshama unbelievable pain, because the neshama doesn't have the ability to leave in a natural fashion, in an organic way. It never gets closure. And that's why, God forbid, when there's a cremation, we can't even sit Shiva. Because when you sit Shiva, it's not just the mourners who are sitting Shiva. The soul sits Shiva. It's a process. It's a process through which people are able to regain, to come back to themselves. And when there's no Shiva, so there's no closure. When there's no shloshim, we don't have these markers, so then the neshama is not able to mourn. As the neshama cannot mourn, the people cannot mourn. And it goes even further. The halacha says you cannot say kaddish to somebody who gets Rachmana Litzlan cremated. This is really spooky stuff. Very scary stuff. But the point being that's made over here is that a normal neshama, typical neshama that's connected to a body, has to slowly wean itself off the body. And the reason that the body doesn't decompose instantaneously is because the neshama actually remains tethered to the body. Remains tethered. Now, what did the Ramban say about the neshama of Yaakov Avinu? Vizu, this tzaddik, techofev alav kal hayom. This tzaddik remained tethered to his human remains. If the neshama remains tethered to the human remains, what will happen to the human remains? They won't decompose. And actually, tzaddikim don't decompose. We have multiple stories of tzaddikim who didn't decompose. I'll read to you. First of all, I'll share with you that there's a book called Ashkafta the Rebbe, which I don't have in my library, unfortunately, but I remember seeing it years ago. It's in the end of Ashkafta the Rebbe, where the Rebbe Rashab had to be moved after an extended period of time. He passed away in Rostov on Don, which is a seedy town in southern Russia. And they had to exhume his body and the few Hasidim that were buried over there. And the only whole body they took out of the ground was the Rebbe Rashab. The other bodies were all badly decomposed. But the Rebbe Rashab was whole. And the Rebbe's father had to be moved because he didn't have a proper burial. And there was a minion of people, all of whom swore in a Sefer Torah that they took out a whole body from the ground. It's not a joke. It's like serious stuff. I mean, you have the story of the Gemara. Right? I just read you the story of the Gemara of Rabbi Yashia, Chia by Yashia. So here in this Sefer Eitzer Plois, he collects a number of different things. He says the Baal Minchas Elazar, the Munkach Rebbe, he writes in his Sefer Divrei Torah, and this is a quote from a Sefer, Kisha Yisi Oz Bar Sholosh Es Hashana, when I was a Bar Mitzvah boy, Ve'ishepinu Chela Gadlama Be'Sachayim, when they emptied out an enormous part of the Jewish cemetery in the area which is called Hukliva. And I suppose it's some Transylvanian town. He says, because they were making, they were building train tracks, and the government sequestered a piece of land, so they informed the Jewish community, we're going to be building train tracks over your cemetery, move your bodies. The Munkat, the Minchas Elazar, the Munkat Rebbe is a boy, a 13-year-old boy, and he says, they dug up a number of people, they had to dig up graves. And he says, they came across a grave of a woman who had been buried over 100 years earlier, and the tombstone said extraordinary things about this woman's righteousness. And he says they found the whole body. They dug up this woman, it was a whole body there. And he says there was a very, very old grave, which didn't have a year, they didn't even know how old it was. But it said on the gravestone, Ish Tzaddik, and they said it was actually almost whole. And he said in the same graveyard, not far away, they said there was a well-known philanthropist, a well-known person in town, and he had only been buried less than a year before, and there was very bad decomposition. They could barely put something together. So there's this concept of tzaddikim who don't decompose. The Baal Shoyal Umeshiv, the very, very famous Rav, German Rav, Yosef Shaul Nottenhausen, he writes that when they had to move the part of the cemetery of the city called Lvov, so over there was a great rabbi named the Smeh, and he says when they had to dig up the Smeh, hundreds of years after he was buried, he was whole as the day he was laid to rest in the ground. And he brings down an account, an eyewitness account of they had to dig up the grave of the Baal HaLevushim, Reb Mordechai Yaffe, and also that his body was whole. So it's not simple. There is such a concept of bodies that don't decompose. Tzaddikim who don't die. So we still don't have exact clarity of what this means. I'm gonna tell you a little personal story, and then I'm going to go back to the Ramban and on to Rabbeinu B'chayim. My great-grandmother died when she was 103 years old. I was very close to her. And she told me many times the following story, that when the Nazis came to Budapest, so her father was a person who studied Torah. He didn't have any official position. His wife ran a business that he was involved with. She ran the whole business, my great-grandmother, my great-great-grandmother, great-grandma's mother. Her name was Bubby Bela. And her father was a person who primarily studied Torah. And he was known as people considered him a very righteous person, that tzaddik, came to the blessings, and so on and so forth. When the Nazis came to town, this is the kind of Jew they were looking for, to terrorize the population, Jew with a long white beard, and, leader of the people. So he had an older daughter who already had married children. My great-grandmother was one of 13 siblings. So his eldest daughter had a home like for people who weren't well. She ran like a home for people who were compromised, called it a sanatorium. So he hid over there. And the Nazis came to this place where there were people who were not well, and this was their first victims. They shot everybody. Just came in there, shot everybody, left everybody there. Blood and gore and everything, just left. My great-grandmother said that several weeks, they hadn't heard from their father for several weeks. Several weeks later, a Gentile neighbor came, ashen-faced, and he said, I had a dream last night. And so your father. And he said, come and make sure I get buried. It's weeks already. I need to be buried. And they went with him. I don't understand the exact details. I don't know the exact details of the story, but they went with him to the sanatorium, and it was an awful scene. Awful scene of I don't know how many bodies, but many bodies, all in a very bad state of decomposition. And my great-grandmother said her father was whole. They could still see the fresh bullet wound. Whole. As if he had just been shot an hour before. So these are not, this is a case of somebody I heard from my own great grandmother. These are stories of tzaddikim, righteous people who don't decompose. And the Rebbe Rashab kind of, when you look at the words what the Rebbe Rashab says here, and you see what the Ramban says of techeifa fall of kol hayayim, it just adds up. It makes sense. So what does it mean though when we say that we have these tzaddikim who that like it looked like Yaakov died, but really he didn't die. So I want to quote to you from a sefer called Mor V'Shemesh, and then a Kabbalah sefer called the Tzioni, and then we'll go to Rabbeinu Bechaya. The Mor V'Shemesh says like this: Nishamis kol shara tzaddikim, other tzaddikim, not like Yaakov, he says. They remain bound in the bond of life. However, they don't have any other ethereal kinds of bodies. And they remain connected to the physical body that they inhabited during their lifetime. They remain connected. And when the tzaddik is buried, that's the meaning. The neshama, this is the place where the neshama resides. The neshama remains connected. But he says, but Yaakov Avinu, the point here is not only to chayfav al kol hayom, not only remain connected to his body, but he actually had a secondary convention. He had another body, if you will, a different way to inhabit this world, not only to be connected to his terrestrial remains. In the words of the Sefer Tzioni, he says like this: Kol hanefashos nisharis arumos, all souls remain stripped. They do not wear this ethereal garment, so to speak. They don't have another garment. Whenever they want. He says, even the souls of very righteous people don't necessarily have another body or another convention through which they should be able to function in this material world. When God wants to send tzaddikim on a mission, he says like Nevois, a Yisraeli, the story of Nevois, then he could send them in a body, and they can do whatever they have to do. But he says otherwise, they don't have any other additional convention, no other envelope. And after they finish whatever it is, the mission they got, then they're stripped of that body. I'm going to use the term body. And they go back to being stripped, meaning not connected to anything physical or material. But he says, "Shall Yaakov Avinu ein nisheres aruma afilo sha'achas." The soul of Yaakov never remained stripped, never remained removed from a body for even a moment. In other words, that even at the time that it was connected to the material body, the material remains, it always had the ability to continue to function in this world with an ethereal kind of existence. And that's what's unique about Yaakov. This is the words of the Ramban as they're explained. So even before we go on to Rabbeinu Bechaya, from this we can understand when Rashi says to us that they thought he died because it had all the symptoms of death. There was a body. The body was not alive. The body, the physical remains were buried. And that's fine. What they didn't know is that Yaakov continues to function in this world. They didn't know that. How could they know that? Why would they necessarily know that? But in fact, when we say Yaakov lo meit, it means Yaakov's neshama was not removed from the terrestrial material world. He continues to function in this world, only in kind of a different form. Let's go through Rabbeinu Bechaya. And then we're going to try to sew this business of Ma'azara Bechaya. Sew up the business of the children are alive, he is alive, the juxtaposition. Rabbeinu Bechaya says, he quotes the Rashi, and he quotes over here, brings out Ramban, he says, the Gemara says, was this done for nothing? What was the whole point? And he says, so the thing is like this. He uses a much more explanatory terminology. He says, Nafsho shel Yaakov, the soul of Jacob, Hayo merachefet al gufo tamid, is always floating or hovering above his body. Because he was such a tzaddik, because of the take of Dushas, because of his incredible holiness. And now he explains. Shar nafshas tzaddikim, he maintains that the souls of other tzaddikim that are not on the level of Yaakov, chozrot l'sharshon, they go back to the source, v'kevan sha'olu l'yardu. Once the neshama leaves, it could be it takes the neshama a long time to leave. Maybe the neshama lingers in this world. A tzaddik's neshama. Maybe the neshama will stay here for an extraordinary amount of time, but eventually at some point the neshama will leave, go to its source, and once alo, lo yordu. It's a one-way ticket. But Yaakov, l'kedushat gufo ma'alato, because of his incredible holiness, and because of the value and virtue of both body and soul, hosanafsha oila v'yeredes, he says Yaakov was in constant state of flux. He was, so to speak, elevated to a higher state and coming right back down. He had the freedom to travel, a diplomatic passport, not limited. V'akoyach hagodol hazeh, this incredible power, he says, eini nimtza rak l'kedoshim ha'shebaretz. This is like David HaMelech calls it in Tillamit, the holy ones in the ground. He says, this is yechidi ha'doris, very unusual people, kegoin rabbeinu ha'kodesh, like Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi. I didn't quote this Gemara before, according to the Gemara of Masechet Shabbat, because he doesn't go into detail of the Gemara of Masechet Shabbat. Rabbeinu Bachaya here quotes the Gemara, and he says, this Gemara is found in Masechet Ksubas and Perek HaNoisa. It's on page 103. I actually spent a significant amount of time in this Gemara a few weeks ago in a class, on the class on Parshas Chayesara. So I'm not going to go over this Gemara again, but we went through this Gemara, and I explained to you various things about this Gemara. But briefly, the Gemara says, Kol beis shimsha havei asa lebeise. Each and every single Friday afternoon, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, more than a decade after his passing, he came back to his house and he made kiddush for his family. Then the neighbor came knocking on the door. It was Friday afternoon. Omru la'amsei, the maidservant said, Shtiki, quiet! Rabbeinu Yosef, the rabbi's coming! Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was coming back to make Kiddush. Now, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi knew about this because he said before he died, make sure you set a table on Friday night. Make sure you're ready for me. Kishashama Rebbe, when Rebbe heard that the maidservant said this, Sule Asa, he stopped coming. Why? Shaloi Lahoitzi Lazal Tzadikim and Rishonim, he didn't want to make other Tzadikim look inferior. Because not everybody came back to their family to make Kiddush. That's why Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi stopped. Rabbeinu Bechaya says this is an example of a tzaddik's neshama that was able to be a neged and come back at will, at any time that he wanted. And he says, how much more so when it comes to Yaakov? And Rabbeinu Bechaya goes through the details here, and he says you have to understand that Yaakov and Yitzchak and Avraham are not mutually exclusive. But all the holiness that was developed through Avraham Avinu is built on when Yitzchak comes along. Yitzchak is the memale makom, he fills the place of Avraham Avinu. And then he adds and he builds his spiritual structure. And then Yaakov comes and inherits all the spiritual majesty of Yitzchak and all the spiritual accomplishment of Avram. And Yaakov is all of that plus. And he says, because of this, Yaakov reached an extraordinary high level of holiness. And this is the reason, Sha'akadosh Baruch Hu, Shanikra HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hashmai, Yaakov called, God calls himself by Jacob's name, like it says, the expression in the prophet Isaiah, in chapter 29, it says, Kadosh Yaakov. It doesn't say Kadosh Avram. It doesn't say Kadosh Yitzchak. It says Kadosh Yaakov. Rabbeinu Bechaya then sets off on a Kabbalistic explanation, speaking of Avram being on the right, which is the idea of chesed, of kindness and benevolence, Yitzchak being on the left, which is the idea of stringency and restraint. And he says, Yaakov occupies the middle fulcrum. And he says, when you understand this concept according to the Kabbalah, you understand that every extreme begets an extreme reaction. And he says, because of that, because there are extremes, it's not possible for there to be a continuous balance. But he said, Yaakov represents that symbiotic kind of reality in which Yaakov brings together both the right and the left. He has that balance, and the central fulcrum is able, so to speak, is open. And that's how Yaakov was able to exist in two worlds at the same time. And this is the meaning, he says, Yaakov Avinu lo meit, ach nishar kayim beguf ubenefesh. What does it mean, lo meit? Meit means that there was life, and then life changed. Life changed, the neshama is no longer alive physically, but the neshama is alive spiritually. As we say, tzadikim b'misasayin, that tzadikim in their passing, kuruyin chayim. We use the terminology life, but they're not alive physically. But he says Yaakov is alive not only spiritually, but also physically. But he says, Haguf hazeh hu guf hasheni. He doesn't call it a guf hashani. He vowelizes it as a guf, a secondary body. Secondary body. And he says, this secondary body, which could also be a guf hashani, he says, this is a guf dak. It's a very refined kind of terrestrial reality. in which hanefesh mislabeshes b'tzuras guf. The neshama is connected to some kind of convention, which is not neshama convention. It's body convention. But it's not like a physical, regular body. It's not a blood of plasma and bone. It's a different kind of body. Just like, for example, light or photons are physical, although they're not tangible. And they could travel millions of miles a second or a minute, whoever it is. Light is very different. Light is no density, light is no weight, but it's still part of the physical world. So there's like an ethereal reality. It's a body. Maybe it's called energy, a radio wave. It's also physical things. It always fascinates me. When you go into a deep parking garage, your cell phone stops working. Or the radio doesn't work in the car. Like, somehow the dense walls actually make a difference. The radio waves can't penetrate. So it's not physical, it's not tangible, but it's very much part of this world. And you actually could make a physical barrier between a radio wave. It's just like phenomenal. It's like, it gives you an idea of the physicality of the non-physical world. So there's such a body. If we understand this within quantum physics, we can understand that there's a fourth dimension and there's a reality of physical reality, which is not exactly physical as we tend to think of it. He says, "Udak moed," it's very, very refined. It's very refined. Mislabish b'le'itu mizumanis. He has his times. He has his times. Like, what are his times? Like Me'erev Shabbos, Erev Shabbos. Like Friday afternoon. Okay, that's a b'chidon asik. He came Friday afternoon. That's when he used the body. Or miyom ha-kippurim liyom ha-kippurim. We talked about this in a class of Parshas Chayesara. How Avraham Avinu came back in a terrestrial existence for Yom Kippur. I saw printed in a sefer that the Torah Chesed. Shlomo Zalman Fratkin, the Rav of Lublin, who made Aliyah to Israel in the beginning of the 18th century, mid 18th century, he told his wife that he used to see the Tzemach Tzedek physically every Erev Leil Yom Kippur. This is after the Tzemach Tzedek had passed on already. That every Leil Yom Kippur, he would see him b'hokitz. He would see the Tzemach Tzedek literally. I don't know what that means, but listen to what Rabbeinu Bechaya says. Who mishotet ba'olam, this nefesh, this body, it so to speak, reverberates through the world. Mishotet literally means like flies, it flies around. You're talking like radio waves now. Bishlichuto shlachadosh baruch hu, in missions that God gives him. Umitra'el lemishu chafetz bo. He shows himself to whoever he wants to show himself. Should you merit it, you could see it. Don't expect it, but that's the reality. Harishon, the first body, is gas. The first body is dense. The first body is bone and sinew and plasma. And that body was nechnat. That body was embalmed. That body was nikbar. That body was bodied. It was buried. Kipshuto shel mikra. Of course, there's a Rabbeinu Bechaya. What do you think? His body was alive? He was eating and sleeping? Ridiculous. The body was laid to rest. The body is dead. But he didn't die. Just because the body died doesn't mean he died. And that's the meaning of, we go back to the Gemara where Rashi says they thought he died. What does it mean they thought he died? They thought that this is a regular death. And they saw the symptoms of death. And the body was dead. But Yaakov's not a body. Yaakov's a person, the spirit. The spirit never died. Not only the spirit didn't die on a spiritual level, the spirit didn't leave this world. Because when the spirit doesn't have a body, it leaves the world. But Yaakov Avinu continues to maintain the possibility of living in a convention, in an envelope, in a body of sorts, in the physical world. So nidme lahem, from their perspective, he died. Of course, Yaakov's sons look at him and say, he died. But this is what death means. There's a body and a soul. There's somebody at home. There's a warm body and somebody alive. And then this body and soul separate. So there's no longer a life in this world. They didn't know. They didn't know. And Yaakov maybe didn't know what was going to happen. But the reality was, the Torah said he didn't die. Because dying means that the neshama leaves this world. And Yaakov doesn't leave this world. And he remains very much a part of reality here. Even if you and I can't see him. Germs are real. Radio waves are real. Quantum physics is real. I can't see any of those things. In fact, nobody can see any of those things with a naked eye. And if you would tell somebody 100 or 200 years ago about these things, they would laugh you out of the house and put you in a hospital for crazies. But today we know it's a reality. So when we're talking about a reality, and you say, oh, Rabbi, get real. This is not real. It is real. Just because I can't see it, or I can't touch it, or I can't feel it, doesn't mean it's not real. It is very real. Torah says it's real. And he says, and this is exactly the point of the Gemara. This is why Rabbi Yochanan responded and he said, Mikra ani deiresh, how do I know that Yaakov is still alive? I'll tell you how I know, because I expound the verse. The verse is, Hinene Mashiach ve'ezaracha, I'm going to save you and your progeny. Makishu lezarei, he is likened to his progeny, Mazarei b'chayim afu b'chayim, if his children are alive, he is alive. In other words, that means, Mazarei b'chayim, begufu b'nefesh, just as his children are going to be redeemed from captivity, are alive, alive physically, alive body and soul, afu b'chayim, begufu b'nefesh, he's alive body and soul. Which body? Not the body that was laid to rest. Not the body that was embalmed. Not the body that was buried. A different body. The Guf HaSheni or the Guf HaShoni. A different body. But he's still alive. And the Rabbeinu Bechai says something unbelievable. Kisha Peronus Bali Yisrael, when the Jewish people suffer from difficult situations here in Galut, Ein Margish Ba'ele Yaakov, the only one of the patriarchs is able to feel it. Is Jacob, as it says, Vayivar by Yaakov, that they burned, the Yaakov was burnt. Ukhshat Tova Bali Yisrael, when goodness comes to Israel, Ein Margish Ba Eli Yaakov, Yaakov feels it. Shenemar, Yogel Yaakov, Yismach Yisrael. The Pasuk says, Yaakov is joyous. Israel celebrates, Israel rejoices. Umin Hayadua, Rabbeinu Bechaya says, it is well known, Kiloshoin Margish. When we talk about feeling, that we're talking, it doesn't mean that Yaakov's body felt it, the body that's buried. Because if the body that's buried felt it, how could you do that to the body? Imagine, Yaakov's body felt it. You mean when they cut out his kishkas and whatever else they do? We'll talk about that soon, how they embalm, what he felt. How could you do such pain? How could you bury a tzaddik like that and throw dirt on him and leave him there in 30 below, beneath the ground? He feels so much pain. No, he doesn't feel pain. That's not the body that feels. The body doesn't feel. A different body feels. Ki im haguf hadak, this is the refined body. Sheyesh bo mamash. It is real. It's real. It's not a spiritual thing. It's not a neshama thing. It's a real thing. It's so real that it's bal hergish, that I can actually feel pain. It can feel joy physically. And this is the story of Rabbeinu HaKadosh making Kiddush, he says. And this is the Kufaloi, the diggers that we talked about in Mesechus Shabbos, that the Gemara I read to you before. And this is the secret of Yaakov, he says. Yaakov is able to be Olev, the Yodid. He can come up and he can come down. And that's Yaakov has, so to speak, the ability to travel freely in all worlds. And that Yaakov is not only Yaakov, because you see, he's talking about Rabbi Yashir Bar Achoy, and he's talking about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, and he likens them, he juxtaposes these tzaddikim, which means that there are tzaddikim, not every tzaddik, but there are tzaddikim that continue to live physically, albeit not in the bodily, literal sense. That doesn't mean that the grave is empty, and it doesn't mean that the body physically feels, but the neshama is connected to those remains. It remains connected at all times, seems really every tzaddik remains, and some tzaddikim, like Yaakov, remain physically alive in another form. But that other form is in this world. Of course, this now presents us with an enormous question. So if Yaakov was the kind of tzaddik who remained physically alive in this world, although it doesn't mean physically alive with his body, but as Ramban said, Techofef aleyom, or the gufes merachefes, then how did his body dissolve or disintegrate? How could Yaakov's body have decomposed? Even other tzaddikim who don't have the diplomatic immunity of Yaakov to travel freely in all worlds, they don't have a diplomatic passport, so to speak, they don't have the ability to assume another form, even those tzaddikim don't decompose. How could be Yaakov decomposed? Not only Yaakov decomposed, however, if you look, you'll see that it speaks about Yehuda, and it says that Atzmois of Shal Yehuda Mizgalgalin, that all 40 years, the Gemara says, that Yehuda was in the grave, it says his bones were rattling. And it doesn't say a body, it says bones. And if it's bones, that means that the body must have decomposed. The Gemara in Makkos, in page 11, side B, it says that Kol Arboim Shana, all 40 years, that Yehuda's body decomposed. The human body was being carried to Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's Moisev Shel Yehuda Mugulgalin Ba'aron. The skeleton was rattling until Moshe asks Hashem, begs mercy from Hashem, and the bones put themselves together. So what happened to the flesh? Flesh must have rattled them. How could that be? Do you know there's an incredible story in the Gemara? It's a story that's found in Maseches Bava Metzia, on page Pei Dalet. The son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Elazar Bar Reb Shimon. Rabbi Elazar Bar Reb Shimon, he gave advice to some of the authorities that were looking for thieves. And he said, well, look for the people who are dozing off during the day. You'll know who's up at night. And they did that. And they caught the thieves. And these thieves had relatives in high places. And they were very angry, including some of the rabbis, very angry at Rabbi Elazar Bar Reb Shimon. So the Gemara says, when he was dying, he said to his wife, I know that there's many rabbis who are angry at me. And Rashi says, because the thieves were rounded up because of the advice I gave the authorities. They're not going to take good care of me. They're not going to take proper care of me after I die. It's pretty awful stuff. So he said to her, leave me in the attic. And he says, don't be afraid of my body. Don't be afraid. There's no ghosts in the house. Don't be afraid. Reb Shimon Bar Elazar remained over there for 18 to 22 years, unburied, in the attic. The Gemara says, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Yishtoyle, Eima de Rabbi Yonason. She met the mother of Rabbi Yonason. The Yishtoyle, Dvitzu de Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon, who knew the mother of the wife of Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon. And says she heard from her, the mother of Rabbi Yonason heard from the wife of Rabbi Shimon, that it was lepachas mitam nisari, not less than 18, v'leitfei me'esen etrein shnin, that were not more than 22 years, that agnise ba'alisa, I had to keep him entombed, had to keep him hidden in the attic until we brought him to burial. But he says ki have salikne ma'ayin alei b'mezaya, if you would touch the hair on his beard, blood would come out. In other words, you're talking about a body that did not decompose for up to 22 years. So, if the son of Rabbi Shimon Yochai's body doesn't decompose, how does Yaakov decompose? And why do we say Yaakov decomposes? Because that's the embalming. And Yehuda decomposed. And not only Yehuda decomposed, but in fact it says that Yosef decomposed. And this it says, Vayikach Moshe es atzmos Yosef. It doesn't say Moshe took the body of Yosef, it says took the bones of Yosef, which seems pretty clear that Yosef no longer has physical remains, not remain alive, which is even stranger because Yosef was certainly embalmed, and they're still digging up mummies today, which are basically coming out whole bodies. How could it be that Yosef only had bones left? And how could they have to have done this to Yaakov? Doesn't seem to make sense. It flies in the face of much of what we've spoken of tonight. So the Or HaChaim talks about this. He's bothered by the same problem. And he says, there's a number of possibilities here. He says, one possibility is that Yosef allowed this to be done to his father, because this is what was done to all of nobility. And if they would not embalm him, and they would see that his body doesn't decompose, then Yaakov would be in grave danger. What would the grave danger be? They would say he's a god. They would start worshiping. And that was the last thing Yosef wanted to happen. We knew they're going to keep him there for 70 days. Yaakov's body is not going to decompose. And this will be terrible. So therefore, Yosef has no choice. He doesn't want him to turn into, so to speak, a god. It would be, he says, this would be a shock to them. They would go crazy from this. And they would never allow them to take Yaakov's body to Israel. So therefore, Yosef had no choice but to allow Yaakov to be embalmed. But in truth, he says, Yaakov would never have decomposed. Of course not. How could he, they would, if everything we learned, he says, if Rabbi Elazar, but Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai didn't decompose, for sure Yaakov Avinu wasn't going to decompose. The Or HaChaim has another suggestion. He says this might have something to do with the concept of Matan Torah. It says by Matan Torah, Poska Zuhamasan, that the toxicity that flows through our veins, it's seized by Matan Torah. So any toxins, any poisonous element of the physical reality stopped by Matan Torah. And unfortunately, it resumed when we built the golden calf. But he says, for Tzaddikei Yisrael, from Matan Torah and onward, they stopped decomposing. But maybe before Matan Torah, there would be decomposition. So all the stories of non-decomposition are post-Matan Torah, not before Matan Torah. Then he gives another suggestion. He says, even if Yaakov's body wouldn't decompose, there's still something left in the stomach. And that could have decomposed. And that would have had a bad smell. So therefore, there were whatever leftover remains of the food that Yaakov had eaten, and in order for that not to happen, that's why he had the body cleansed and so on and so forth. But at any rate, he says, how do we deal with, this is why Yosef did what Yosef did, and Yosef maybe didn't know about this. He didn't know that the tzaddikim don't decompose. Maybe he didn't know. So he gives four possible solutions. Now this is a problem. This answers, if we say the business of after Matan Torah, that it makes sense for Yosef and Yehuda. There's no questions there, because they're all before Matan Torah. But if we say, like the Aruch Chaim's first approach, that he was afraid that the body wouldn't decompose, why would Yosef decompose? So one of the interesting answers that's given, this answer is given by the Sif Sikoyanim, he says that the reason that Yosef decomposed was because Yosef prayed that his body would decompose. Actually, Yosef shouldn't have decomposed. Even if it wasn't a tzaddik, it wouldn't decompose because they embalmed him. How did he decompose? And he says because Yosef enjoyed the material world. He was a king. He ate like a king. He lived like a king. And Yosef didn't want, therefore, the bodily remains afterwards. He said he wanted, in order to cleanse his soul from anything he might have benefited from the material world, therefore he prayed that his body should not remain, that his physicality should not remain, that unlike usual tzaddikim who don't decompose, he prayed that he actually should decompose. And the similar answer is given also with regard to Yehuda, that Yehuda wanted to be absolved of his sins and his imperfections, and therefore he would have prayed especially that there should be nothing left but bones. But as a rule, we can have a good authority to say that tzaddikim, real tzaddikim, do not decompose. The body doesn't have to decompose. And as I shared with you, there are many instances that we know of real stories in the real world of bodies that didn't decompose. But this is the philosophical idea. This is the spiritual philosophy behind it. So in closing, there's one little problem which we haven't answered. The problem we haven't answered is, proverbially speaking, it sounds like Mazaro b'chayim can be understood in two ways. One way is, if his children are alive, and he is juxtaposed to his children, he must be alive too. But another way of understanding it is, Mazaro b'chayim afu b'chayim is as his children are alive. It's so to speak, his life and his children's life seem to be intertwined. And nothing that we said helps us understand how his life and his children are intertwined. And the Rebbe actually speaks about this. The Rebbe says, really and truly, even the approach of the Maharsha, Abarbanel, and the various other commentaries that explain this in a non-literal fashion, that Mazaro b'chayim, that as his children are alive, he lives through his children, they too can be brought into tandem with the principles studied here. They too can also appreciate this Gemara literally. They were not denying the Gemara. When Abarbanel said that the Jewish people are called Yisrael, so that means Israel still lives. But he died. His children live, fine. And this can be said about anybody. So the Rebbe therefore suggests that even those opinions that we started on the outset, even according to those opinions, Yaakov Avinu is lo mit. He doesn't die. How is that possible? It says, because the other resolution here is as follows. The Alter Rebbe says in Tanya that the neshama of Yaakov was, quote, this is found in the Geres HaKodesh, in the 7th epistle. It says, Yaakov's neshama is klula mikol ha-neshamas shabi Yisrael me'ata v'adaylam. That Yaakov's neshama has in it a piece of every soul of all time. It could be an iota, a cell. But there are billions of cells within a person's body. The Yaakov's neshama is made up of cells. Each cell, by the way, is an independent reality that can actually be divided. It's an identifiable reality. Every neshama comprises a cell or a microcell within the body of Yaakov's neshama. And therefore, inasmuch as kol hatzadikim, the nefesh of all the righteous are nitzchim, but after they pass away, so then it's spiritual life. Spiritual life. Even if they're in this world, it's in a spiritual way. Why? They don't have a physical body. They don't have a physical body. But he says, even according to the opinions that don't follow Ramban Rabbeinu Bechaya, even if we are to say that the meaning of Yaakov's life that continues is because his progeny, his children, his nation continues to exist, the Rebbe says this too can mean that Yaakov is alive because Yaakov lives. Where does he live? In my body and in your body. He lives in us. Because there's a piece of Yaakov in us. Because a piece of our neshama is part of his neshama. We are all represented in the neshama of Yaakov. And because there's a kindred sense between all the neshamas of the Jewish people and between the neshama of Yaakov, which is comprised of all neshamas of all time. So therefore, mazare b'chayim, as his children are alive, if there are Jewish people alive, then who b'chayim? Then he's alive too. Because Yaakov's living through us, physically. The physical body of Yaakov is the Jewish people. And then this could be the meaning of the Gemara Mazare B'chaim Afu B'chaim. That means to say, Me'achar Shazare Shal Yankiv Nimsa B'chaim, because the progeny, the seed of Yaakov are alive. And the neshama of Yaakov is found within the neshama of each and every member of the Jewish people. Afu B'chaim. So then he is physically, terrestrially alive. In bone, sinew, and plasma still alive. And Yaakov continues to live in this world. So that's the meaning. Yaakov Lomes. And the great tzaddikim, the greatest tzaddikim of the ages, like Yaakov Lomes, it says Moshe Lomet, Moshe never died. And it says there's a piece of Moshe in everybody. It says Mordechai Lomet, the Mordechai of the Megillah never died. And this is how Hasidim look at the Rebbe. This is the spiritual philosophy that we live with when we say that the Rebbe remains with us, that the Rebbe remains alive in this world. This is what it means. And it doesn't mean all tzaddikim live on for eternity, but there are certain tzaddikim that can physically continue to live in this world, if not in a tangible sense, nonetheless still in a very real way, and therefore lo meit, they never really died. The body was laid to rest, but that is not the definition of finality of death. Anyway, it would be really nice if Mashiach would finally come, and we wouldn't have to have a guf dak and different realities, but that everything could be Olam HaTchiyah. We can reach the third level where all neshamas will be visible and seen in a body that we can physically touch and appreciate. With the coming of Mashiach, B'mheira will be Amenu.
Amen. 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 Thank you.
Thank you.
It was very interesting.